Every year at this time, the Smithsonian Institution takes over the National Mall a week or so before the 4th of July fireworks to celebrate the folklife of the world. This year, in the space between the old Smithsonian Castle and the Natural History Museum, with the Capitol to the east and the Washington Monument to the west, stand yurts from the steppes of Central Asia, a truck decked out in brightly painted metalwork from Pakistan, a miniature blue mosque from Istanbul, and high-painted panels that recreate the facade of St. Mark's in Venice. It is a celebration of the great trade route, the Silk Road, in crafts and music, stories and customs. It begins in Venice, the hometown of Marco Polo, who traveled east 8 centuries ago, bringing back tales of lifestyles and objects not known in the West. Although, as the band Calicanto demonstrates, the Venetians did know music that it took Marvin Hamlisch centuries to discover for the movie The Way We Were. From the far end of Marco Polo's journeys come Chinese opera singers performing The Monkey King Borrows the Fan. Among them, Shi Shufang, who studied classical Chinese opera in Shanghai. In a world that is now traversed by seemingly infinite routes of trade and migration, she performs it in lands undreamt of by Kublai Khan.
She lives in New York, Queens. She often performs in Danny Kaye Theater in Manhattan.
This is the unfailing joy of the annual Smithsonian Folklife Festival. It's bringing together to the same stages, under the same tents, improbable combinations of performers from unexpected places. Wrestlers from Manipur in India watch rug weavers from Afghanistan ply their craft, and vice versa. From Iran come practitioners of spiritual bodybuilding. One comes from Los Angeles. Security concerns kept all but two of the Iranians out of the U.S. It involves rhythmic exercise with wooden weights or with chains in the shape of an archer's bow to a beat provided by a spiritual leader, Morshed Mereghan of Tehran. Bijan Rabbani explains that as Mr. Mereghan bangs a drum and punctuates by striking a bell, he is both counting and also chanting Persian poetry.
These are epic poems, and they essentially epitomize the plight of the champion and what he has to do to achieve such a high level.
Dr. Rabbani is a dentist from Rockville, Maryland, who says this kind of exercise remains popular back in Iran.
It's essentially equivalent to today's bodybuilding and aerobics exercise with a more spiritual and a deeper roots, about 1,100-1,200-year-old roots.
Another venerable art of physical culture from several hundred miles east is demonstrated on the same stage.
And now we invite the wrestlers to take their positions. Yes.
Two bare-chested Mongolian wrestlers, built like interior linemen and slapping their thighs for emphasis, circle each other in a pre-bout eagle dance. And as they do so, Byembachaf Bachargal performs the ritual introduction of a Mongolian wrestler. We are told that this is essentially how a Mongolian wrestling coach says, "In this corner, hailing from whatever village, son of so-and-so, weighing so many pounds," with a detailed account of the wrestler's record, his prowess, and why he's chosen today's opponent. This is from a world before microphones, and the introducer knows how to project. When the fight begins, with narration provided in English, the same man who provided the introduction does something that we're informed is inauthentic, but it's a crowd pleaser on the National Mall. He supplies a live soundtrack of throat singing.
In Mongolian left leg. There is no weight limit. There is no age limitation. If you feel okay at the age of 60, you are welcome to this competition.
Typically, there would be a song, we're informed, but not throat singing. Byambachev Bachargal just happens to be a talented throat singer. Which brings us to a genre of music much in evidence at the Smithsonian Folklife Festival, and one which, over the years, this program has often showcased to mixed reviews. This is Mark van Tongeren, a Dutch musicologist, who says he was fishing for a dissertation topic a few years ago when he realized that overtone singing was an open field. So it was off to Siberia and the Russian Republic of Tuva to study and master an art by which the human skull seems to turn into a bagpipe.
Originally, it's the music of herdsmen who were alone on the steppes working all day and just to kill the time to speak to the spirits of the mountains and the animals were singing alone. But in recent years, since with the Soviet influence, they have started to form ensembles and sing together and add instruments and make it more and more elaborate.
On a performance stage at the Folklife Festival, Mark van Tongeren leads workshops in throat singing. In this one, he was joined by Mongolian singer Sengadorj.
I suggest that there's maybe someone in the audience who wants to learn this. You are first. Please come up. Sorry, what's your name? Lois.
Lois is from Gaithersburg, Maryland.
You want to just give it a try, see how far you get?
Okay. No, wait a second, hold on.
I think you were doing something that's close to the second technique I demonstrated. So maybe you can you try to make this sound? And everybody can join in, actually, and go. You can try it for yourself. You join in?
Lois tells us she's actually tried this before, having heard a CD of throat singing that intrigued her. The very modest spread of throat singing in the U.S., and even the pretty dense crowds at Mark van Tongeren's workshops, are no measure of the genre's popularity. In Central Asia, it seems, popular music has actually embraced throat singing as an element. This is a group called Roksanaki from Kazakhstan, which plays what it calls shamanic pop. Singers invoking an ancient animist tradition sing like Sengadorj, but they're playing modern rock instruments.
Yeah.
This musical mixing is matched by another illustration of eclecticism along the Silk Road. The Japanese clothing designer Nakagawa Masuhiro is here with his own Silk Road-inspired project, explained by writer Martha Wong. What does he call this? What does he call this process?
This is called Tokyo Remix Project.
Remix.
Here at the Silk Road, we'll be remixing material that the group found on a field trip going through Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Italy, and Turkey. They just stopped people in the street. They said, hey, I love your headscarf. When did you buy it? How long have you had it? What were you doing when you wore it? And I've got a Tamagotchi here. Do you think you'd trade for it?
Naka, as he is called, specializes in remixing clothes. Some examples are on display. A skirt made of three old flannel shirts. Pants made out of a well-worn leather jacket with collar and zipper included.
Here's a t-shirt. It's made out of three other t-shirts, Mickey Mouse, the Blues, which is, I think, an Arizona softball team, and a t-shirt from Williams Air Force Base. Whoever told him the story loved Mickey Mouse, so he's still at the front of the t-shirt, but the collar has been cut to be a frame for Mickey Mouse, and the shoulder seams have become darts for the t-shirt.
So this is now a woman's t-shirt. And
right.
Face of Mickey Mouse and the collar are around the bust of the t-shirt.
Exactly.
Naka personifies the spirit of mixing styles. Bleach blonde, waves tattooed across his shoulders, a chain necklace, jeans, and a white tank top. Tell me a little bit about remixing. Is it a very fashionable idea in Japan now?
Yeah.
リミックスのアイディアについては、はい、日本ではすごく流行してますか、
はい、そうですね何回か、4回ぐらい、ミュージアムや、いろんなとこでやりました
Yes, it's really、fashionable and it's really he doesn't want to say it's trendy but he already did like exhibition like four, five times in the USA and in Japan
In other words,It's trendy. Martha Wong, who serves as the guide to this exhibit, points out that it is very much in the spirit of the Silk Road.
The reason there was a Silk Road is because people wanted silk. In those days, silk was a techno fabric. It was new, it was magic, it was shiny, it was strong. And the reason people wanted it is because they cared about how they looked, always looking for the latest new thing.
And like Kazakh pop music, with its debts to the Beatles and the animist shamans of pre-Islamic Central Asia, remixed fashion reflects the spirit of interweaving the novel and the traditional along the Silk Road. The Folklife Festival remains on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. through the weekend.